this podcast, we're going to explore the art of emotional intelligence and how to begin. It's a recording of an event where Dr. Manoj Krishna was invited by the Society of Eye Surgeons in England to talk about the subject. And he was in a conversation with Dr. Lee Tak Tan.
So good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the afternoon session of the East of England Study Day. So I have with us today Dr. Manoj Krishna, who is the founder of the Human Wisdom Project and the Happier Me app, who is himself formerly an orthopedic surgeon in the NHS up north. He has since dedicated his time to helping people discover their inner resilience through cultivating emotional intelligence and better understanding of themselves. So welcome, Dr. Manoj Krishna. We are delighted to have you here with us at our meeting today.
Thank you, Lee. And it's a pleasure to meet, to be with everyone, though I can't see everyone, but hello, everyone. Okay, great. Nice to meet everyone. Cool. Excellent.
Right, okay. So, I should not move this around. Right, okay. So we're going to have Sorry. 1 minute.
No worries.
HDMI has come out.
Yeah.
We're back. Yeah, there we are. Right, okay, so no more moving around. Right, so it's going to be a very informal conversational format. All right. So in today's conversation, we're going to be exploring the topic of emotional intelligence, why it's important, how to be emotionally intelligent in our day-to-day life. And we'll be also looking at some practical situations where we can apply this life skill. This is interactive, and please feel free to ask questions of Dr. Krishna at any point. Okay, so we're just going to start by dissecting down the term emotional intelligence. We hear this all the time, EQ, emotional intelligence, in all walks of life. So Manoj, what is emotional intelligence from your point of view? What does it actually mean?
Yeah, see, the important thing to realize is there's no one definition of it. In its broadest sense, it's understanding your emotions, managing them, and then applying that understanding really to every aspect of your life, whether it's communication, relationships, resilience. So we're talking essentially about self-knowledge and how that is so useful a skill to have, no matter what you do, and especially in medicine with all the pressures that we face. And of course, it's a skill that's not taught to us anywhere, right? You want to learn how to be emotionally intelligent. It's very difficult to know because the root of it, I can give a lecture on it, but it's going to make very little impact unless you begin your own journey of learning about yourself and how your mind works, because that's where the real learning occurs.
Yes, it's a bit like listening to a lecture on oculoplastics, isn't it? Until you actually do the clinic and go to theater and have your own learning experience, it doesn't seem to make sense.
Yes.
And in a way, I think it's very much like learning clinical skills. We spend so much of our time learning clinical ophthalmology, but actually beyond that, that's why I call this the I and beyond. And this afternoon, we're just looking at the area a little bit beyond the eye, maybe into ourselves, which is equally important in determining our success, if you like to call it that, as ophthalmologists, as doctors, as humans.
It's probably the most important skill that's not taught to us anywhere, you see. But let's start with why should we bother, right? Why should we bother with exploring the subject? But if you look at the statistics, 80% of us are stressed, and that's a general population. Medicine is probably much higher than that. About a third of us suffer from anxiety, 10% from depression, 17% of people self-harm to varying degrees. One in six suffers an addiction of some kind. And of course, doctors are not immune to those statistics, right? So we are part of all that, and our jobs are so much more challenging. So if you are armed with this emotional intelligence, and it's a living thing in you, then you can meet all those challenges without getting too stressed or anxious, and have wonderful relationships, communicate with care, be happier in yourself, and so on. And I wish this was taught to me when I was a young man, as a doctor. So that's my passion, really, to help share this understanding with everybody.
That sounds amazing. Yes. So how do we actually practice this? How do we become emotionally intelligent? We
Okay.
were taught in medical school how to examine patients, come up with a differential diagnosis, formulate a treatment plan, but we were not taught, or rather, this was not one of the emphases, how to be introspective, to look into ourselves and analyze our own emotions, come up with a diagnosis as to why we feel the way we feel, why we act the way we act. And I think we're going to address some of these issues today.
Yes. So I think we can bring the same skills that we have as doctors, say as eye surgeons or orthopedic surgeons, but to our own mind. It begins with curiosity. Why do I get angry and have no control over it? Or why do I, if my colleague says they've got some brownie points or whatever, bought a new car, why do I feel envious and have no control over that emotion? Or if the chief exec says he wants to see me, why do I suddenly have this anxiety and I can't control it? And so on. So it begins with curiosity. What's going on in our own thinking that makes us feel this way? So we apply the same rigorous scientific principles to learning, but the learning is about ourselves. And as we begin learning, we realize we have no control over our emotions. That's the general thing. It doesn't matter what your emotion you're feeling is, you have no control. It's automatic in your own mind. And the second thing that happens is we tend to blame other people for how we're feeling. That's the mind does that. So if I'm angry, it's your fault. If I'm envious, it's your fault. If I'm anxious, it's about some event in the future. If I'm stressed, it's about something that's happened outside. But if we break it down really slowly, we'll realize there's always a trigger on the outside, but there's a reaction from my own mind to that event. And it's in the reaction that our emotion lies. So we could be curious, not about the event, but about our reaction. And of course, our mind assumes ours is the only way to react to any event, right? But five people responding to the same event will have five completely different emotional reactions, from no stress at all to very severe stress. So then, why does our mind react in that particular way to that challenge? So this is a process of learning. And the more you learn, the more emotionally intelligent you become. You're learning not only about your own particular mind, but about the mind in general. So, as an eye surgeon, for example, there'll be some things that are true for all cataracts, but then each patient's cataract will have its own particular peculiarities and so on. So similarly, our own mind will have its own particular peculiarities, but there are general truths that we can explore together, which is, I suppose, what we're trying to do this afternoon. So it's about observing, taking ownership, and then learning. So let me illustrate this with an example. Okay. It's a three-step process of inquiry. So say I'm angry, okay, with a colleague who has not done what they said they would. someone said, I will do something and they haven't done it. And you are really angry with them. So emotional intelligence begins by being aware. First step. Awareness of how I'm feeling. Okay, I'm angry. That's the first step. The second step is to not blame either the other person or yourself for that feeling, but to take ownership of that feeling in yourself. Because here we're just being scientists, we're trying to learn, be curious. And the third step is to ask a question. What's going on in my mind to make me react in this way, to feel this? And you will realize the more you do that, that behind every emotion is a thought. There is no feeling that's separate from a thought, but you don't see the thought because it's so quick. So, in that case, for example, I would learn, my anger comes from disappointment, right? Because somebody didn't do what I wanted them to do. Where does that disappointment come from? It comes from an expectation. Where does the expectation come from? It comes from me, right? So my mind has been responsible for my own anger, and I couldn't control that reaction. So I observed that really clearly, and I learned something new, that most of the time, our anger is an automatic reaction created by our own thinking, reacting to an expectation or a disappointment or whatever it might be. And that comes from our own conditioning. Where does that expectation come from? From our own conditioning, from our own thinking. So I am responsible for my own anger. And then you can keep on exploring that. So that three-step principle is the art of inquiry, which I will show you in the Happier Me app in a minute. And it's just based on observing, taking ownership without blaming anybody else or yourself, and then asking a question and exploring. So that's just one example, Lee, of say anger, but you can take the same process and apply it to anything else.
Brilliant. That sounds really simple. And it's really interesting. I really like the way you say, be curious about how your mind works.
Yes.
Almost like the curiosity of a child. My 4-year-old son, when he was 4, would ask relentless questions of why. But mommy, why? Why can't we go out? It's raining. But why can't we go out if it's raining? Why? And you say because, and you say, but why because? Because of what? And I think it's just interesting. Perhaps in childhood we learn to explore our mind better than in adulthood because there are just so many barriers to actually see our thought processes clearly.
Yes. And where this process of learning about yourself is different from, say, the knowledge, say, how to cook a dish, a recipe, or something, is that I can transmit that knowledge to you. And you can read a recipe and reproduce it, or read a manual and operate, or whatever. But I can't give you this understanding of what anger is. I can tell you, but it's not going to make a difference. The change in yourself will begin when you start observing in yourself, taking ownership, asking questions of yourself. And it's that learning that then starts making a difference in your life. So the next time you are faced with a situation, your reaction is different. You see, controlling anger, controlling fear, controlling anything is really hard. Because the power of that emotion is far more than our conscious control can manage. You may not be able to express your anger, but inside your body feels it. And if you do manage to express it, of course, as you know, we doctors, we get into all sorts of trouble with our patients and colleagues and the medical council and so on, because we've not been able to get a handle on our emotions.
Yes, absolutely. I think many of us know that we've sacrificed so much and worked so hard to be pursuing the career that we're pursuing today. But ironically, our work is often actually the source of stress and anxiety. We're often distressed by performance at work, surgical complications, for example, patient complaints, or conflicts at work, and we're anxious about conflicts with management, for example. And so, given these examples, do you have any tips specifically to share about how we address these issues
Yeah.
emotionally intelligently?
So the more we. Is that all right?
So there's
Okay.
somebody chipping in from the audience, not just patient complaints, but colleagues complaining about each other. And that
Yes,
is one
yes.
major source of workplace conflicts.
Yes. When I was practicing as a spine surgeon, we had more complaints of colleagues complaining to the GMC about each other than about patients complaining to the GMC about doctors. So, it's an occupational hazard, right?
So how do
Okay,
you deal with that?
let's start with stress. Same principle. I observe that I'm stressed. My mind assumes it's coming from the outside. But I'm going to pause, be curious, and say, what's going on in my mind to make me feel this way? Why is my mind reacting in this particular way to what's happening? And in that process of learning, you'll uncover that majority of our stress comes from our own thinking. I know it's very counterintuitive because our mind tricks us into thinking it's coming from the outside. So stress is often just the difference between how things are and how we want them to be. Whether it's a traffic jam, or the way my son is in bed at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or the way a colleague is talking to me, or a way a patient is talking to me, or a complication I've had, or whatever it might be, right? It's just the difference between how things are and how I want them to be. So if I want to get rid of my stress, I can do only one of two things. I can either change the event, which is often not possible, or I can change my reaction to it. And to change my reaction to anything, I need to understand where it comes from. So that again opens the door to learning. I'm curious, what's going on? And when you start exploring that, and I can show you around in the app, there are about 14 or 15 ways our mind creates our own stress. For example, our mind is conditioned and we're not aware of it. So from childhood, we are conditioned in our own particular way. We're not aware we're being conditioned, and yet we become attached to that conditioning. So we think this is normal. Anything other than that is not normal. So our mind is going around the day thinking, comparing what it knows with what it sees. And if it's very different, it gets stressed. Could be very simple, like, you're in Saudi Arabia, you see two men holding hands, you get really stressed because it's so different to your conditioning. If you're in London, you don't think twice about it because your conditioning is different, and so on. And it applies to medicine, to how our colleagues are behaving, juniors are behaving, patients are behaving, and all of that. The second area which causes a huge amount of stress is comparison. Our mind is comparing all the time. We're not aware of it. So the moment someone is better than me, immediately I feel envy, feel less than others, low self-esteem, or I get angry with them, or I'll decide how to take it out on them later, and I blame them for how I'm feeling. So like that, if you're curious, if you're a young person, one of the biggest causes of stress, so actually even for doctors, is worrying about what other people are thinking about us. Like, what are my colleagues thinking about me? What do my patients think about me? What does the management think about me? The GPs think about me? It's an unconscious process, and it creates a lot of anxiety, and we're not even aware of it. So the moment you wake up and realize what's going on, then you can respond with intelligence. So it's like driving with the lights on so you can avoid the potholes. So this self-awareness is, I think, the key to a happier life. And if people ask me, like my mum used to not understand self-awareness at all. So I'd give her this example. She'd say, "What is, I can look at myself in the mirror, Manoj. I can see myself, but what does this self-awareness mean? I have no idea." So say if I'm in a conversation and I notice that you're interrupting me, that's awareness, okay? If I notice I'm interrupting you, that's self-awareness, because I'm observing what I'm doing. And if I'm curious as to why we both are interrupting each other, and I start this process of learning about myself, and that's emotional intelligence, see? Then I'm going a little deeper. I'm learning. I like to speak more than I like to listen. I'm always keen to, push my point of view. I'm keen to express myself, all of those things. So that's a really good example of what is awareness, self-awareness, and emotional intelligence, how the three are different. But self-awareness is the beginning of emotional intelligence.
It's really interesting how you talk about disparity in expectations as a source of stress and our past as a source of conditioning for our current thinking. Because I'm personally aware that sometimes we expect people to behave like we do. And when they don't, that is a disparity between expectation and reality. And that can often be a source of stress or disappointment because we are conditioned to think that this is the way which is right to behave, and we were conditioned to think this is the way to behave. And worst of all, I think we are almost convinced that the way we behave is the right way, but actually we don't know, do we? This is how we're brought up, or how our past conditioning has led us to believe this is the right way and that is the wrong way. And perhaps if we can overcome that, then it can actually remove quite a lot of sources of conflicts from what I
I
say.
mean, conditioning is such a fascinating subject to explore because it's not only responsible for our stress, but it's responsible for all the conflict in our relationships, right? I think it should be done this way. You think it should be done another way. I mean, I've had so many endless arguments in scientific meetings, about how what your opinion is versus another person's opinion. And in the end, you realize that it's just conditioning. That's why we're all so attached to our opinions and our beliefs. And the moment you realize the other person's mind is working in the same way as yours, they're also attached to their conditioning, but they're not aware of it, you see? And that attachment, particularly in the scientific sphere, stops inquiry, stops the mind being open and curious. So many applications in our relationships, at work, and so on.
Yes, and so I think that's why it's actually important to see it from the other person's point of view, and to be kind to each other because you don't know what's going on in their lives or what's actually causing them to behave the way they behave and think the way they think. In fact, interestingly, at last year's college meeting is where I attended a session called "Kindness: The Business End of Healthcare" by Bob Klaber, who's a consultant pediatrician at Imperial College. And he spoke about the importance of cultivating the kindness culture, especially in healthcare, and what we can do to initiate kindness. And I often ask myself, are we always kind to one another? We talk a lot about kindness to patients, and that's almost an expectation, a given. But do we often act in a kind way to colleagues and to each other? And I often ask myself, what can we do to overcome the barriers that stop us from being kind to each other? So Manoj, do you have any tips on that? How do
Yes,
you
so interesting you brought
kind?
that up, Lee. I think the first thing to wake up and realize is how important that kindness is for your own happiness, because the mind assumes wrongly that kindness is something we're doing for somebody else. But kindness is a gift you give yourself. First of all, kindness is the glue that holds your relationships together. I mean, whether you're professional colleagues, you're going to be together as consultants for 20, 30 years. And if you don't have this kindness, your relationships are going to be frayed. And if a relationship is frayed, you're the person who's going to be affected the most in terms of being unhappy. So our happiness, whether it's at home or work, depends on the strength of our relationships. So if we can invest in those relationships with kindness, actually, it serves us in the long term. You know, the 80-year Harvard study convincingly proved the single most factor that determines our happiness is the quality of our relationships. And so many of our relationships at work could be better, let's put it that way. And kindness is the most important element in that. I think again, for me, it's the inquiry-based approach because you may want to be kind, but that's not enough because your mind is not going to let you be kind. Because if you're stressed, for example, you're focused entirely on your own stress, or you're anxious, or you're comparing yourself with your colleagues and you're envious of what they've achieved, you can't, you know, there's no kindness there. And conditioning is such an important one that you mentioned earlier, because you realize that their thinking comes and their behavior comes from their conditioning and they're not aware of it. Just as your thinking and behavior comes from your conditioning. So you're quite right. By understanding your own conditioning, it's easier to understand somebody else. And from that understanding comes compassion. And from compassion comes kindness.
So it all starts with the journey of understanding of oneself, and
Yes.
that's the key to everything.
Yes.
Is
But
that right?
kindness is, you know, once you start exploring it, and we've got a beautiful discussion on kindness in the app I can show you. It's kindness in thinking. It starts with thinking. Can we think more generously of the people we meet rather than critically? Can we, because there's always two ways. Can you think positively about them? Hey, what can I appreciate about this person rather than what can I be critical of them, you know, and why they haven't done more? Can I be more understanding? Then it comes kindness in speech. So thought in speech, is this the right time to, and again, it comes from emotional intelligence. How am I speaking? What's the quality of my tone? How am I listening? Am I asking a question? Am I curious? Am I paying real interest? Am I interrupting? And so on. And then, of course, kindness in action flows from all of those. You can't just have kindness in action without having kindness in thinking and generosity in thinking, you see?
The other area that we often hear about emotional intelligence is leadership with emotional intelligence or wisdom in leadership. Can you say a few words about that in terms of how we can apply emotional intelligence to leadership, how emotional intelligence can help us become better leaders?
Yeah. So in fact, tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, and I can send you the link to share with everyone, we have an event, a Happier Me live event, exploring self-awareness and leadership. And I'm exploring it with the number five in the British Army. He's Brigadier Mike Butterwick. He's just retired, but he's taken a keen interest in leadership and how self-awareness can help. And actually, it works in so many different areas because without being aware of your own emotions, you can't manage them. If you can't manage your own emotions and your own actions, how can you think of managing anyone else's? That's number one. Number two, all leadership positions carry much more stress and anxiety than. As you know. So unless you know how to deal with that in yourself, and there's not enough time to cover all of that, and which is why we have the app and all that, I'll show it to you in a second. But It's again comes from this inner learning. The more you learn about stress and anxiety and about yourself, the better you're able to manage your own emotions and react or respond to situations without getting stressed. So the situation's there, you're separate from the situation. See, there's no automatic reaction after a while. So all leaders need so many skills. And you know, the statistics are that 50% of leaders fail within 2 years because they lack emotional intelligence. They lack these skills. And they lack them because, number one, they don't regard them as important. And because also it's not been taught to us anywhere. So it feels like we have to learn a foreign language, see? And people are really uncomfortable learning about themselves. And maybe we should just address that briefly and say, there's nothing to be worried about. We're just examining, I mean, as medics, we could say we're examining the way the eye functions together. It's the same eye in all of us. It's the same mind in all of us. We're just looking, learning, understanding, and growing in our own inner intelligence. So relationship skills, the more you understand yourself, the easier it is to understand others. Communication skills. You're aware, for example, of your tendency to interrupt people, your tendency not to listen to people, your tendency to be critical and judge people, to listen without compassion and generosity, and also to listen for what people are not saying. What's the emotion behind the words that are being spoken, Famously, the Brits talk about the weather because behind that, it's a convenient front for everything else that's going on in your own mind. So the relationships, communication, then integrity is so important, right? The number one quality leaders need is integrity. And all of us, in our own mind, our self-interest is operating in the background without our own understanding. And so, if you're not aware of your self-interest, it is going to direct the course of your actions. So, very simply, I'm a spine surgeon. You come to me with a disc prolapse. I can send you to physiotherapy. I earn zero as a in private practice, or I can send you for surgery where I'll earn a good packet. If I'm not aware of my own thinking, my mind is going to pick the option that's best for me. Not the best for the patient. So, in all walks of life, particularly in doctors, in medicine, we need to have this deeper self-understanding. See, self-understanding helps you to self-correct. See, that's the key thing. And if you're not aware of it, and you look around you with all your colleagues and actions, so many of them are driven by self-interest, managers, CEOs. Once you understand this is what's operating in the human mind, you can understand the behavior of most people. But also being able to manage your fear, Lee, is the key. Fear is one of the biggest drivers of human behavior. It operates in the background, shaping our lives in ways we're not aware of. So just asking yourself a question, how is my fear shaping my life? What's behind it? What's the root cause of fear? My mind is assuming it comes from, the job interview or what I'm worried about what colleagues are thinking, but it's just the way my mind is reacting to that. And the moment I see that clearly and I start learning about my own mind, then my anxiety can find its own balance. It usually melts away. You can live much, much happier lives. What's the point of studying for 20 years, becoming a consultant? You're at the top of your game and you're just unhappy because, around your own mind is reacting all the time to its challenges and you're not at peace with yourself. So the other amazing gift that emotional intelligence brings is a sense of peace. It's not just about becoming more successful and all of that. But I think the biggest prize it brings is a sense of peace, which no money can buy, as you know.
That is amazing. It is interesting your exploration of self and I think it's really pertinent that actually maybe the reason why we don't explore our own thoughts and our mind is actually for fear of what we might find in that.
Yes, that's the biggest worry, but it's not, it's misplaced. It's a misplaced anxiety. See, for example, we're not learning about the content of our memory, we're learning about the process of it. So, for example, if you start exploring thinking or feeling, you'll realize we believe what we think is true. We believe what we feel is true, right? But it's not always the case. Our mind plays tricks on us. That's why it's so important to be able to question our own thinking and our own feelings. And if you ask me, what's the number one quality you need for emotional intelligence? It's curiosity, awareness, and then the ability to question yourself, your own thinking, to observe what's going on. Why? And that curiosity will open the door to this amazing emotional intelligence, which will transform your life or anyone's life.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Dr. Krishna, for the very profound and enlightening talk. I could sit here and speak to you all afternoon. It's really absolutely fascinating, and this has certainly I have personally found that very helpful. So if you would like to spend some time taking questions from the audience and then
Yes. And then I'd love to show people, if I could, around the Happier Me app very quickly that you can have a look at and download straight away. But let's take some questions first.
So if anybody has questions to
Or
ask
a comment.
of Krishna or any comments to contribute to the topic. Yeah, the roving microphone. So dare I risk turning it around at the peril of losing the screen? Maybe you can come in front.
Thank you very much. That was an inspiring talk, and hopefully we'll be all able to engage with part of the app and amalgamate it in our everyday practices. One of the principles of reflection is reflection on action, inaction, after action, and one of the with our high volume clinics, high volume surgeries, we all push to do more and more in the same day. Where are we going to find the time to be curious and to develop this kind of skills or this emotional intelligence? What I'm trying to say is part of this process is a little bit of a luxury, a little of self-indulgence, because we're all conditioned and we all operate under fight and fright, especially we middle-aged blokes. I'm just wondering about, finding the time to engage with the whole process, if it makes
Yes,
sense,
it's a good
because
question.
for me, for the big three things is time, trust, and team, and I'm struggling to get it embedded in my work-life routine. Yes, so sorry, I can be far.
Thank you for that. When we wake up in the morning, we don't forget to brush our teeth, do we? Because we know that in 30 years' time, if we don't brush our teeth, we're going to have real health problems. Or we exercise because we know that's important for our health. So I think it begins with realizing how important this is for your own life. After all, why are we doing anything that we do? It's because we want to be happy and at peace. Why did you become consultants? Why are we earning all this money? What for? The answer is because we think all that's going to make us happy. And if you're not happy, then you have to be curious and say, why not? And then if you want to, we have all the tools you'll need to begin that journey for yourself. Because the purpose of life is to be at peace with yourself. What's the point of all this activity? You know, if in your own heart there's no peace, after all, real success isn't what money and bank account and all that you have. It's the peace in yourself, right? Because after all, why do we have big bank account? Because we think it's going to make us happy. It doesn't. So to be a better doctor, to be a better human being, to be a better partner, husband, wife, whatever, and to be at peace with yourself and live with compassion. This is a skill that's really important. Oh, and one more reason. I worked with an anesthetist. He was a really good friend of mine. And this is a true story, and it's in the public domain, so I can share it now. And one day he was in the anesthetic room, and only he and the patient were in the anesthetic room. The patient woke up and said he had fondled her breast. And there was no one, it's just his word against hers. So it went to the GMC. They suspended him from work. He jumped off a bridge. He had three small children, took his own life. He was the last person who thought it could happen to him. And nobody around him thought it could happen to him. But it can happen to you and to me anytime, because we are not aware of how our mind is going to automatically react to all its challenges. Right? So this is why this is a life skill that's completely for our own survival. Whether you actually jump off a bridge or you feel like jumping off, it doesn't matter. Do you understand? There's so many doctors in this country who are taking their own lives every year. Completely avoidable. And if we all had the skill, which was part of our education, just as we learn to breathe and eat and brush our teeth, then we could sail through our challenges so much more easily. And to begin, you need a regular breathing practice to calm your mind. Then you need to have a mind that's curious, exploring. And once it becomes a part of your life, you can do it while you're eating, drinking, talking to people. Everywhere you are is a place where you can practice and learn this emotional intelligence.
Brilliant, thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Krishna, for spending your time with us.
Let me take you for a minute, if I may, Lee, and just show you. So we've got this app we built. It's called Happier Me. And I'm just sharing my screen. Can you see it?
Yeah.
And you can download it, and there's a free trial, so there's no obligation to buy anything. And our mission, the reason I left medicine to do this work, is really to reduce suffering and to help make the world a better place for everyone. And I think this suffering can be reduced. If you think about it, besides the physical suffering that disease brings, all emotional suffering comes from our own mind. And the more we understand it and can live with it, and with a deeper intelligence, the better we can respond. In medicine, there's another huge area where this could be applicable, which is we are treating the physical disease, but not the emotional reaction to that illness from the patient or their families. One of my close relatives has breast cancer. It's not the cancer that's the problem. It's the anxiety around it. And the entire family is affected by that anxiety reaction to the illness. The cancer itself is being treated nicely, no problem. So this is the app. It's called Happier Me. It's on the Apple Store or Android Store, also on the web. Starts with a big feel better now section. So when you're stressed or anxious, there's a daily practice. And there are many topics to explore. So this one is, for example, the section on managing your emotions. It goes into a lot of depth. All the topics are there. So if you do want to begin this journey of learning about yourself, there's a huge section on work and leadership, for example, and how this can be applied to be or happy at work or lead better or communicate with care or have happier relationships or to avoid and overcome bullying. You know, 20% of the NHS workforce feels they're bullied. And the people who are bullying, of course, have no idea they're doing so. How to make better decisions, deal with criticism. And we have a huge module on kindness, how to live with kindness for ourselves and for others. So plenty there. I think I'll stop there and let you download and explore it for yourselves. But if you have any questions, Lee has my email. Please write to me and drop me a note.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Lee, for inviting me. And let's see what we can do together. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's start a journey together.
Yes. Thank you, Lee. Okay. Bye-bye.